This is Vermont Edition. This week and next week, we're bringing you debates for many statewide offices. We've already had debates this week for Attorney General and for Treasurer. And today, we bring you the major party candidates for State Auditor. I'm Bob Kinzel. Joining me in VPR's Montpelier studio are Republican candidate Dan Feliciano, a financial consultant from Essex Junction, and Doug Hoffer, who's the Democratic Progressive candidate. Doug Hoffer is the incumbent auditor and is seeking a third term in office. Welcome to the program. Great to have you here.
Thank you, Bob.
Thank you.
And listeners, welcome to you. If you're following along on social media, use the hashtag VPRDebates to comment on what you're hearing from the candidates today. So let's take a look at our format. It's the format we're using for all our debates. In the first half, I'll ask a series of questions with the help of Vermonters who've been submitting their questions to us in advance of today's debate. And right now is your last chance to submit a question. Send it to vermontedition@vpr.net. In the second half, the candidates will ask each other questions, and they'll have an opportunity to ask a follow-up question. And if time allows, we'll squeeze in a lightning round before we wrap things up. So please limit your answers to 1 minute today. And with that, let's start our questions. Doug Hoffer, in the time that you've been in office, your office has conducted, I think, 19 performance audits during the last 4 years. Which one do you think has had the biggest impact on the workings of state government and on the people of Vermont?
Well, in addition to the 19 performance audits, we also have some other non-audit inquiries that we've conducted and published as well. It's hard to know now from this perspective which has had the biggest impact because some of them are about the way state government operates. You may recall the sole source purchasing report. I hope that that will have an impact. I know they've just revised Bulletin 3.5, but that could save a considerable amount of money and get us better services for a better price. But we won't know until a few years pass, and that's often the case. As for affecting people, we did a job on the sex offender registry, which I think is important. It's a little tiny corner of state government, but there are those who would like the addresses of those folks who are on the registry to be published. And I think, understandably, others were saying, not so fast, let's make sure that it's an absolutely foolproof system because you can't have the wrong names on that file. So, and also we've looked at DCF and fraud and a number of other things, but that's all I can give you for now.
So do you think the release of some of these performance audits actually changes the way that state government works?
Oh, no question about it. Some of them are not about performance per se. They're about the operations, the nuts and bolts, the machinery of state government. For example, we did one on cell phones, and we found, among other things, that there were 5 million unused minutes. We identified $300,000 worth of savings. Another one in corrections, a vendor wasn't using a provision of the contract to get reimbursed for unused drugs. That saved them $450,000 and so forth. So, yes, there's definitely a very immediate impact in some cases, yeah.
So you've mentioned a couple of the performance audits that your office has done. How do you decide what to do? Are some mandated by law? Do you have discretion? How do you decide these things?
A little of both. I do have considerable discretion. I talk to my deputy, my senior audit staff. I listen to people from outside. We actually did an audit based on a whistleblower's allegations at the Department of Education. It's rare that the legislature asks us specifically to do a job. They have the sex offender registry, in fact. We did two of those. Sometimes it's literally ripping from the headlines, you know, current events. We did two jobs that I think were very important on the functionality of the Vermont Health Exchange, as you may recall. But, you know, it's a big state government. We try to do a mix of things. One is follow the money, for sure. Another is, can we make a contribution to the discourse across the street in the legislature? And is there an immediate need that we can meet? Now, having said that, audits take months, so it's, you know, we don't have a rapid response team. It's not like that.
Have you ever decided to do an audit and then gotten a lot of pushback from that agency in state government?
They're not always happy to see us coming, but it's usually a matter of whether it's a convenient or inconvenient time for them, and we're very sensitive to that. But to answer your question directly, no. What would be the point of them pushing back?
Dan, presumably you're running for this office because you think you can do a better or a different job than the incumbent Doug Hoffer. So tell us why that's true.
Yep. So I'm not going to, you know, I'm not disputing any, you know, the numbers that Doug has presented here, right? All interesting audits. I think my focus would be on if we're going to improve the state as a whole and really understand what the cost structures are, not only would we do a financial and regulatory audit, but we'll do the operational review and understanding how the state is performing. On top of that, I'd like to create an auditor scorecard, if you will. And we've done this, I've done this in other government agencies where you're looking at financial performance, you're looking at regulatory compliance, right? That's a key thing. Operational performance, or, you know, how do we do things better, faster, cheaper, and do we really know who the customer is? And then on the final piece there, it's how are the people? And when I say the people, how are state workers? Do the state workers have a good understanding of their roles, of what they're being tasked with and what they're charged? And one of the things I found in many governments, state, local, and federal, is that we've really shortchanged our state employees. We haven't given them the clear guidance and direction. They really are not sure what's the right thing to do. And I think if we score and measure all those, we'll have a good indication of how each organization's improving or how it can be improved in the long run.
So do you think that scorecard approach would be a lot different than what's happening now?
Yeah, it would be very different. I was on a federal task force. It was called, believe it or not, the Metric Review Task Force. And all these agencies, federal, state, and local government, had metrics that they were tracking that literally had nothing to do with their core jobs. And the way the data was collected was done in a way that it wasn't really meaningful. So as we pared down the metrics and understood really what it is, we had an opportunity to share that with the employees, the operational management team, the customers who were the various state people as well as in the federal government to help them understand exactly what's going on there. So it can be done. It can be done well. And it's a very critical piece of fixing any business. You hear during the elections often that, you know, someone will say, I want to cut costs, improve efficiency. Do they really know how to do that? And that's a different task in itself. A report in itself is interesting, but you have to get dirty and roll up your sleeves and understand how to drive that change forward, right? Reports don't drive results. Reports, I call them trivia. They're interesting things, but someone needs to get in there and show people how to do this and really move forward.
You've also said that you want the office to be more proactive.
Yeah.
What does that mean?
When I say proactive, I think as new legislation's coming out and being discussed, how do we proactively think about how we can audit it? I mean, Doug's been in a horrible position several times where, like the EB-5, how do we audit that? What do we do to go forward and audit that? I think if the auditor is more engaged and I happen to be an operations guy and a finance guy, we can say, okay, if we're going to implement this law, how do we measure it to know it's going to be effective? And how do we know we need to pull something back? So what are the leading indicators? And so that we can understand what it's going to cost to get the data. Can we actually measure it? And if we do measure it, how do we know what's a good number and a good number or a bad number? And how do we react to that? All those things need to be proactively thought out or shared with the legislators. You can't influence the policy, but at least you can ask those questions and say, you realize this isn't really auditable. And I can't guarantee that it's going to save money or I know how to react if something does go badly.
Doug Hoffer, what about this idea of a scorecard?
Well, obviously, I'm all for performance measurement, but I think he may be misunderstanding our role. Mm-hmm. We can't go into a department and tell them how to set their own goals and which metrics to use and how to collect and verify the data. That's their job. If I do that, then I completely compromise the independence of my office, and we can't audit the work once they've done it. So I am a big believer in performance measurement. Indeed, we've tried to do a number of performance audits at this level, and it's disturbing in how many instances the necessary data is not available. Furthermore, there are some programs which are based on self-attestations that can't be proven, like VEGGIE, the state's sort of hallmark most important economic development incentive program. It's based on a statement by a CFO or CEO that if not for this program, we would not be able to create these jobs. I can't audit that. It's impossible. And the same thing happened with the Vermont training program and some others. So it's a challenge. I would love to see this information, but they have to produce it. We can review it after the fact.
So, Dan, how would you deal with it?
That's where I have a fundamental difference in opinion and what can be done. As the auditor, you can go in there and say, we're going to audit these items. And you can audit for best practice measures, right? You can get those in a lot of good places and say, the measures you have today don't measure your performance, and here's the recommendation of measures, right? And I understand the auditor's office doesn't really have the authority, but one of the things of a leader is the skillful use of influence, and you have to be able to influence that and constantly report on it and remind people that there are measures, better measures that can be in place and are not collected. And you said you have some discretion there. Constantly audit that until people get it and understand it. I've done this. I've put these measures and scorecards in place in many federal and state agencies, and they seem to take it, and people actually gravitate towards it. Once you understand that you're not using the measures to beat people up, which is typically what happens, is especially in business, that you're there to drive performance and create transparency, that's the only way you're going to get it.
You're listening to the VPR debate between the major party candidates for auditor. With us today, Democratic Progressive candidate, the incumbent, Doug Hoffer, and his Republican challenger, Dan Feliciano. Let's go to another question. Dan, you've talked a lot about transparency in state government. So what kind of grade would you give the state for its current transparency efforts? And tell us why you think that grade is appropriate.
I would give it a C at best. You know, if I were being honest with you, I'd give it an F. When you go to the RBA, the results-based accounting website, and you see the measures, they're not even updated. And at best, or happenstance. That's why I'm saying we need to have a scorecard to create that transparency. Once people realize and that you're in there looking at their best interest. Remember, the state employees will benefit from this just as well as Vermonters. You're in there looking at those measures and you're creating transparency into how they're performing. It creates a different dialogue. Then we can have a better dialogue of where we need more tax revenue, right? So there are programs undoubtedly that are underfunded. We can demonstrate that with some real operational numbers, right? There are programs that are probably totally worthless and not delivering any value that we can understand and take those measures from. So when we have that transparency, we can have a different conversation about where we want to cut the budget, where we want to improve the budget, because the money is secondary, right? The operational performance is what drives the requirements for the funding. So once you do that and you have that scorecard in place, you really know who your customers are and how you're performing, and it makes it transparent to everyone.
So what are the obstacles to having that now?
Right. The obstacles right now are, like I said, I was on that federal task force, is having the right measures in place and influencing the right measures to be in place. Everyone should have something around a customer experience where Vermonters get to weigh in and say, how did they perform? You already have, you know, Doug's already doing the financial and regulatory compliance portion. The operational performance, how are we doing? Are we doing things, you know, better, faster, and cheaper? And people say it's difficult to do, but we all make widgets, and that's all measurable in one way. And then we can do one on the other end about the employees, because state employees, the only asset the state has that actually appreciates and values is its employees. We need to make sure the employees are engaged, they know what's expected from them, and by having this transparency and scorecard, they can improve things and move things right along.
Doug Hoffer, what kind of grade would you give the state for transparency?
It depends on what you're referring to. Mm-hmm. He seems to be referring to the work of our office, and I really have to correct
this. No, I'm not talking about
Let
your
me
office.
Finish. Yeah. I really have to correct a misstatement that he made. We do performance audits. Mm-hmm. If you check our website, we just released one a couple of weeks ago on Vital. The whole point was, how do they measure their own performance? Mm-hmm. How does DEVA, which oversees this work, $38 million worth, they don't have the measures. Mm-hmm. Last year, we tried to look at the $120 million that comes from the MCO investments from Global Commitment at AHS. Specifically, how do you measure the performance of the many programs that receive that money? They didn't have the measures. Mm-hmm. And it goes on and on. It's not my job to create those measures. Mm-hmm. I think we have a fundamental disagreement here. The auditor's office can only review the work of state departments and agencies. We can't do it for them. Would I like them to do better? You bet. Mm-hmm. When we go in and audit, do we use best practices? Of course. Mm-hmm. I encourage you to read some of the reports on the website.
Yep.
Doug, if you go in, though, and decide to do a performance audit and you find out that the agency doesn't have those measurements in place, what do you do?
Well, if there's no data, then you have nothing to audit. That's what happened with AHS. We wanted to audit that material, and they didn't have the goals, the metrics, or the measures, and they hadn't started collecting the data. So we said, we'll be back in a year or so. That's all you can do.
As opposed to you going in and deciding these are the metrics?
That's not my job.
Okay.
An auditor doesn't do the work of the auditee.
Yeah.
The auditor reviews and evaluates the work of the auditee.
And the auditor, I believe, when I say more, can be more proactive, as these laws are being passed and as these programs are being implemented, can make recommendations around how we're going to measure this performance.
I've done that.
And I think the auditor can as well skillfully influence the creation and development of the measures. Like I said, reports don't get results. You have to get in there and change people's mind, right? And on top of that, all the data in the world isn't going to change an organization. You have to realize data is directional and change is emotional. So you need to have the data. And once you have the data, you can have a different conversation. But that's where I'm saying the auditor can make the recommendation and constantly audit. These are the best things we need to audit. These aren't in place. And I think part of the auditor's role is saying that we are deficient in the measures, and these are the measures. We need some measure of performance. We need to understand how you're doing things more timely, how you're reducing your costs, or whatever it is. But there's general categories that we need to be more engaged on, or else we're never going to know if these organizations are operating well. And how are the employees? Once again, I come back to the state employees. How are they supposed to know they're doing a good job, right? They need to have they need to be motivated to do a good job. They need to have an opportunity to do a good job, and they need to have the means. And if we don't have these measures and stuff in place, we're drifting aimlessly.
Doug, your office looked into the state's participation in the federal EB-5 program.
No, that's not accurate.
Didn't you look at it in 2012?
No.
You didn't raise questions about...
I wasn't in office in 2012.
So you've never looked at the
EB-5
program?
You're referring to, I think, to a media report from maybe Paul Heinz at 7 Days, who interviewed me shortly after he took the job about EB-5, but it was before I took office. And I explained to him my concerns with the program, primarily the fact that they had advocacy and oversight and a regulatory thing in the same office. And I had worked in CETO and City Hall, as you know, many, many years ago, which was created by people in city government who recognized that you shouldn't have the development advocates in the same office as the regulators. So they split it. So planning and zoning was one office and CETO became another. And I said, if we knew that 30 years ago, how come the administration didn't know that they shouldn't have both of these functions in the same office? But the auditor's office has never looked at EB-5. It's not a state program. It's a federal program. GAO has several audit reports on EB-5, none of them very complimentary.
So you didn't see any state role to oversee?
I didn't say that. The only role of the state is in one staff person. They run the center. But all the data is federal. And in fact, I had a bit of a back and forth with the now departed Secretary of the Agency of Commerce because she made some claims about job creation. And I asked for data to support that, and she didn't have it.
Did that then encourage you to do more digging and have a performance audit on that very subject?
There's nothing to be done. They don't have any data. It's all based on the models. That's it.
Do you feel like your office should have done more with EB-5?
No, it's a federal program with one state employee. It's private money. My interest many years ago in my consultancy was that I thought it was a little odd. The whole thing was a little odd. But I didn't have a client who was going to pay me to do the work. And B, there were a lot of other things that involved much more money and a much bigger impact on state government. Now, this obviously has had a huge impact on Newport and the region. But it wasn't a state program per se. GAO has two reports that I'm aware of that made no difference whatsoever. This is a program that Congress liked, and it's still there.
Dan, what about the EB-5 program? What are the lessons to be learned there, and was there an opportunity for the auditor to be involved?
Doug said it's a federal program. You know, it's a federal program managed by federal agency. Like he said, there's one employee there. Even if he did an audit, who would be the audience of that audit? So as far as the EB-5 program, could something, in hindsight, can something be done? Sure, but who would be the audience? Right?
Let me give you an example. I'm sorry to interrupt, but in my response or my questions to the secretary of the agency led me to a number of memos from the federal government to the various centers around the country, and they've changed this program over time in the way they count jobs. Originally, the construction jobs, which were short-term, were not included. Now they are. Everything they've done until the scandal started to show up has been to expand this program and not make it more accountable. So there's nothing to hold on to, frankly. All of this job information is based on models, and frankly, a considerable percentage of it is not even in the region. It's what's referred to as indirect and induced jobs that don't have to be local.
So, Dan, you agree with the way that Doug has handled this?
I'd love to pin it on him, but there's nothing you can pin on the office. I think there's an opportunity with the all payer. What's going on with the all payer system right now? And that happens to be one of my background. I would, as you know, I've worked and as as an insure, as on the insured side of healthcare insurance, as a provider, as well as a payer, as well as a healthcare IT executive, and I'm a high utilizer of healthcare costs. So as I see this single payer, this all payer model, excuse me, I didn't mean to call it single payer, coming through, I think that's a great opportunity for the auditor to start voicing their concerns and say, how are we going to measure this data? How are we going to handle the dispute resolution of that data? And how are we going to audit it? How are we going to audit the penalties and who's getting the penalties? There's a lot of proactive work that needs to be done. And the costs associated with implementing that kind of control and ensuring that we can audit those payments back to those doctors is going to be huge.
Doug, you talked about making decisions on what to have performance audits about. Mm-hmm. Looking forward, are there some, if you get reelected, that we would see that in 2017 you'd say, yep, here are two or three I really want to do?
Well, there's one that just began about a month ago, which is very substantial, never been done, and I'm pleased that we're doing it. As you know, the state capital budget is anywhere from $60 to $80 million a year, and the money goes to BGS, Buildings and General Services, for the construction, modification, renovation, et cetera, of state buildings primarily. And these are huge projects. And the question is, how well is the department doing in terms of getting them done on time? How much are they over budget, if they are, in fact? How many change orders are there and so forth? This is really big stuff. It's a lot of money. I don't know why it's never been done. The committees of jurisdiction in the legislature institutions in the House and Senate, they don't have professional staff to help with this kind of stuff. They only know what the department tells them. And I'm anxious for this job to be done while the legislature is in session, so I hope you'll see it sometime in February.
Dan said he wants to, if he's elected, he'd like to keep an eye on all payer. Would that be on your screen as well?
All payer should be on everybody's screen. Personally, I'm disappointed that they moved this so quickly. Unfortunately, the legislature appears to have given them the authority to do that. So I think at this point, all eyes have to be on the legislature and ask them, do you really think that something of this magnitude and complexity should have been done this quickly? Now, having said that, the state's been trying to get it together and communicating with and negotiating with the federal government for some time. So it's not as if they did it over the weekend. But it's immensely complex. And furthermore, I don't think anybody would complain or say that the idea of all payers is bad. But the question is a monopoly. We're about to have a very serious monopoly in healthcare in this state. That's the key to me.
The thing about all payer also, so I think it is a very large program. And frankly, I'm not in favor of it. But we have to have audit controls and mechanisms and a voice at the table to understand what's going on. Is it on time? Is it on time? Is it on budget? What has the scope changed, right? As well as what's the risk mitigation plans? I have, having a technology background, I could see myself being key in helping understand and auditing what needs and developing the audit strategy for that. But on top of that, what I say is, how do you get the data? How do you measure the data? All the stuff we're talking about, pay for performance, how do you do that objectively and get that data to say that we can do it? And I still think we still need the scorecard. So the all payer would definitely be on my radar site because that can be a you think Vermont Health Connect at $200 million was a boondoggle? Waiting to see if all payer, if we don't have these controls in place, what that actually turns out to be and the litigation that's going to be associated once a doctor says, I haven't been fairly compensated. And they're going to build models to say, here's my best compensation opportunity. We need to have that scorecard. The auditor needs to be more proactive in sharing that with the public. I have these recommendations in place. Call your legislator. Call everyone. Get them involved. We have to be proactive. And that's the only way we're going to move forward and create that transparency so that we can understand where we need to really spend our money.
This is VPR's debate series, and today we have the major party candidates for state auditor in the studio with us, Republican candidate Dan Feliciano and the Democratic progressive candidate incumbent Doug Hoffer. Use the hashtag VPRDebates to comment today on social media. Just ahead, Hoffer and Feliciano will question each other on some of the key issues in this race. This is Vermont Edition. Welcome back to Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. This is the State Auditor's Debate on VPR. Today we had the two major party candidates for the office in the studio discussing the issues in their race. Democratic Progressive candidate, the incumbent Doug Hoffer, and his Republican challenger, Dan Feliciano. Now, in the second half of the debate, the candidates will question each other. Now, the questions should not be speeches and should be succinct. And you do have the opportunity to ask a follow-up question as well. So to start us off, Dan, what's your first question for Doug Hoffer?
My first question is, I truly believe that you can play a more active role by being proactive. And I don't understand the reluctance to be more proactive and put forth a strategy rather than a report to improve. What do you see yourself doing that in the future, or do you still see yourself playing a more passive role of creating reports and leaving it at that?
Well, that's kind of interesting. You have characterized me as passive, but right. I'm not sure that's fair. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure you're aware of the work that's been done in our office. When we issue reports, as you know, I have no authority to compel anyone to do anything. You said it, I think, before, that it's about persuasion. The reports themselves are recognized as really solid pieces of work. They're not just put on shelves. Not only do we go back in a year and then subsequently 3 years to see if the recommendations have been implemented, but we share them with the committees of jurisdiction. Typically, we are invited in to testify, and as a rule, they also invite the program administrators or agency heads to come in and talk about it as well. So it's not as if I just walk away. I think you have a misunderstanding about the process because I am very active.
I can't understand how you're saying you're active if you're not, if you just measured, you just gave examples of a bunch of programs you couldn't measure and they didn't have the data, and then you'll come back and hope they have the data.
Well, I'm sorry, Dan, but you, again, I don't think you're familiar with the work. We went to the Department of Labor and examined their performance in unemployment insurance and workers' comp and made serious recommendations. The Office of Risk Management, which has now oddly been outsourced, which I don't think is a good idea. We looked at the way they work with departments and state employees to provide a safe workplace and how they respond to complaints from employees about unsafe working conditions. This is all performance. We looked at the tax department and their record in collections. Their job is to collect money. That's a performance. We did that. That's what we do. For some reason, you're characterizing the work as not doing performance auditing. That's exactly what we do.
I guess my characterization is more the work is a report, and we need to have someone as an auditor role that can actually play a more proactive role and say, look, here are the measures we're recommending, right? And we want you to be as transparent as possible.
No, as a rule, we don't recommend measures, Dan. That's not our job.
That's what I'm saying.
Generally accepted government auditing standards do not allow us to substitute our judgment for them. You can't do that.
You can go in there with a benchmark and say, we're benchmarking.
We do that whenever there are best practices, we use them.
And there are tons of best practices out there that you can go in with a scorecard, essentially a scorecard, and say, there's no measures on these? How can that be?
Dan, by your own admission, you're a guy who's had his hands dirty inside the workplace. That's different than the state auditor. Mm-hmm. I think maybe we have a difference of opinion about the role of the state auditor.
Let's get a question from Doug Hoffer for Dan.
I'd just like to continue this discussion. I think it's important.
Go right ahead.
I just asked him, you know, I think we have a different view of the role of the auditor.
I think the role of the auditor can evolve and be more proactive and get involved in establishing a more appropriate scorecard and making the case for that scorecard and having the skillful use of influence. And that's where working in big organizations and as a consultant comes in. I have no authority when I go into an organization. When I was working at the Pentagon, I had no authority. But the skillful use of influence to get things done and understand what's going on and having people get the emotional commitment to try it and doing it and providing guidance as needed, right? I think that's the other thing. And I know you have to – you're saying you're going in, you audit the current performance, and then you leave and then you make your recommendations. But we have to get beyond that because the recommendations within themselves do sit on a shelf.
No, they don't. That's what I just said. We go back and see if the recommendations have been implemented, and they do. I really wish you'd visit the website and see the work we've done. It just doesn't make any sense to me. When we go in and tell a department that we've identified problems and we make specific recommendations about how to address those problems, and they say, you're right, we're going to do that, how do you view that as passive? We get it done.
You say you go back in a year.
Yes.
Dan,
it's on the website. They're called recommendation follow-ups for every report we do, every single one. And you check it out.
And yet we still don't have measures. We still don't have.
You're saying there are no measures. There are lots of measures. Sometimes we go in and tell them their measures are lousy.
Right.
Here's a good one for you. The Travel and Tourism Office, their primary measure is whether the rooms and meals tax increases, mm-hmm. as if the only factor that would influence rooms and meals tax revenues is the work of travel and tourism. Mm-hmm. So when I point that out to the legislature and they say, gee, that sounds kind of weird, but they don't do anything, mm-hmm. is that my fault? You say you have to engage with people and provide some leadership. Have you ever worked with the legislature? This is a beast of a very different kind, all right?
Yeah, I've worked at the Pentagon.
The Pentagon is not elected officials.
So to talk about getting things done.
Do you have a second question now for Doug Hoffer?
What specifically would you do differently with the all payer, right? You have an ability to influence. And are you going to provide some sort of guidance and recommendation?
See, that's a perfect example of how we view this completely differently. Right. First of all, the all-payer agreement between the state and the federal mm-hmm. government has just been signed.
Right.
It was only made public about a month ago. Right? That's not my job to tell them how to change the agreement they just signed. The question is, as this rolls out, mm-hmm. does my office have a role to play in evaluating the impact of the implementation of this new model? That's my job, is to evaluate the way the players implement this new approach. Not to tell them, I'm not a legislator, I'm not a policymaker, I'm not the governor. My job is to review the work of other departments and agencies. In this case, it's going to get even more complicated because now we're talking about private sector entities, hospitals, and healthcare providers.
That's where we have a fundamental disagreement. I think there needs to be active engagement and the questioning and the wherewithal to start saying, we need to start creating that awareness of how we're going to do this, right? Everyone has skin in the game, right? If you're a senior citizen, you want to make sure you're getting the best care possible, and we need to have the right measures. I look at the auditor's role as not only the fiduciary responsibility of ensuring the taxpayers are being protected, but that we're also being engaged to protect them from the future. Oftentimes, I think we're driving with a muddied windshield and a big rearview mirror. What's over the horizon, we need to be aware of. And the auditor can't be looking in the rearview mirror the whole time. We need to be proactive, bringing up issues and concerns that are risk issues to the state. It just can't be, all right, you put this program in place, we audited it, you didn't have the measures, here's some recommendations, we'll see you, we'll come back and do another audit next year and hope for the best.
First of all, my audit staff are not physicians.
Right.
They don't have that expertise. Mm-hmm. It would be presumptuous at best for me, on their behalf or on behalf of my office, mm-hmm. to suggest to the administration or the legislature that I know mm-hmm. enough about the delivery of health care to the people of this state that they should take my advice on a subject mm-hmm. about which I know almost nothing. Mm-hmm. Okay? That's critical. Second, 90% of the budget for my office comes from an internal service fund called the SARF, the Single Audit Revolving Fund. The only way they will pay us for the work we do is if it meets generally accepted government auditing standards. Mm-hmm. And our professional standards manual is based on information from all the major players, AICPA, OMB, and GAO, and so forth. And nowhere in any of those professional standards does it say, I get to weigh in on a matter of policy mm-hmm. before it's even started. Mm-hmm. That's not my job. Mm-hmm. Now, don't misunderstand. I love policy. I mm-hmm. spent 20 years as a policy guy, mm-hmm. and I enjoy the work immensely and developed a reputation about my use of data to advance ideas. Mm-hmm. That's not this job. I fundamentally disagree with you.
And that's a big difference between the two of us. I do have a healthcare background, and I do have a healthcare IT background. So I'm comfortable in those environments and navigating those. I do have a background in change management, so I know how to use the skillful use of influence to navigate these things and drive change. I still think there's a role to play that can be evolved to protect Vermonters and ensure they're getting the biggest bang for their buck and they're aware when they're not.
Second question from Doug Hoffer for Dan Feliciano.
I didn't have the first question, did I?
What? Yes.
That's not your fault. Just work with me. It's a joke.
Bob. All right.
Dan, I'm still puzzled by, my audit staff mm-hmm. are required to live by and with GAGAS standards,
right.
Period.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I can speak to the legislature anytime I choose.
Exactly.
I would never be so, again, presumptuous or disrespectful as to tell them that they should listen to me if I don't have something in hand to share with them.
Mm-hmm.
I go to speak with them after the audit is done. not before. And it sounds like you're suggesting that I jump into the policy debate as it's happening, rather than waiting for the office to produce something that we can defend.
Asking questions and bringing up those ideas isn't jumping in. It's asking the fundamental question of, how do you think we're going to measure this? Have you considered that, right? What is it? What does that look like? And bringing those concerns to the table, because it's your job, right, to understand.
To audit it is a function of how we define the objectives for an audit. Then we go get the data, and then we review it. That's what you do.
It's after the fact. What I'm saying, I still come back to being more proactive and being engaged in what's happening and trying to understand how I can perform a successful audit right out of the gate and understanding how hard. I know how hard it is to set up these data measurement systems, gather the data, report out on that data. I get that. But asking those questions and making sure that – and you did say you have the ability to talk to legislators. Are you considering this? You need to consider this. Otherwise, we end up like
– I do it all the time informally, but I can't go to the legislature and tell them I know more about a program than the people who are running the program. That's not my job. It sounds like you really want to be a legislator, and that's cool. That's a great job, but that's not this job.
No. My job, the way I see the job, I keep coming back to I'd like to see it evolve into a role that's more engaged so that Vermonters don't get caught like we did with the Vermont Health Connect. At the last second, we have all these cost overruns. You can't even get a receipt, you know, to get reimbursed if your company reimbursed your health care insurance. We have to be engaged and understand what's going on. I can't just sit back. And I wouldn't just sit back and say, all right, I got to take this policy you threw over the wall for me. It's going to be in place a year. All right, I can't do anything with it because there's nothing here to do anything with because you guys didn't consider the measures. And then I'll come back 2 years later during the next cycle. Everyone's already running for office again and saying, hey, we need to come back and fix this. It's a fundamental
The Health Connect is a perfect example because the administration, for its part, was in the process of scoping work and deciding how big or small this was going to be. They made a decision that we all know was not the right one. They wanted to be big rather than small and focused. But while they were having that debate, both internally and with the legislature, where do I get off coming in and saying, I know better than all of you? Because I don't. Mm-hmm. And neither do you. Because, you know, healthcare. It could be anything. It could be the Department of Labor. It could be Agency of Commerce. You know, I have experience in a small area as a policy guy, but that's not the time for the auditor to act when they're writing the RFP and making decisions about, are we going to try to loop this back into the eligibility stuff at AHS and so forth, which makes it a $200 million job instead of $50. That's not the time for me to weigh in. That's the time for the administration to work with the legislature. That's not what an auditor does. I'm sympathetic. Yeah, right. I don't want the people to pay for something that isn't good quality. I don't want them to waste money. But my job isn't to get in the middle of the debate between those other two branches of government.
And I think that's where having a scorecard, an auditor scorecard in advance with, here are the key things
in
we're
advance.
Looking for. Here's a scorecard, right? Everyone has financial measures. Everyone has regulatory compliance measures. Everyone should have some sort of operational measure, and you can make it as simple as better, faster, cheaper.
I couldn't agree more, but why is it my job to create performance measures for the Agency of Human Services?
That's
their job.
These are what we're going to audit you on. Be prepared. Everyone has to answer these questions at a minimum. These are our recommendations. And I'm sure whoever's the next governor, if it's Sue or Phil, they would be jumping up and down saying, you know what? I need this because I need to justify my tax increases or I need this to
– You cannot make recommendations before you do an audit. Gagas does not permit that. You simply can't do it.
Have a scorecard, and that scorecard can be your recommendation.
Do you have a third question, Dan? Or would you like to continue this conversation? Do you have a separate question that you would like to ask Doug Hoffer?
What would you do differently?
I was asked that recently by, I think, actually it was a VPR. It was Alex, your colleague. And I think the work that comes out of our office is very high quality. So I don't think there's anything to be done with that. My job is to convey that work to the media and the general public, typically through the media, if we're lucky enough to get coverage. And most of the time we do, but it's not always extensive. There's, you know, some of this stuff is not as user-friendly as it could be. And that's where I could do a better job, I think. I'm not really a soundbite guy. Not that you want soundbites necessarily. But boiling this stuff down to digestible pieces is an art form. Some people are better at it than others. I have no problem getting down into the weeds, but I'm not. I'm looking at you, Bob. I don't want an answer, but I don't know that I'm the best at making it accessible, and I should probably try to do better with that.
I commend you for that, because I think as I read the reports as well, you know, I can see that they're too deep. You know, they go very, very deep, and I wonder about the 80-20 rule. Where could we stop and move forward? And they are very thorough indeed.
Do you have a third question, Doug, for Dan?
No.
Well, in that case, I'll step into the void and ask you both this question. Mm-hmm. You both, I think, have been talking about having this office be as nonpartisan as possible. So if that's the case, why have it be an elective position? Here we have a Republican running. Here we have a Democrat and a progressive running, right? You're identified with the party labels. If the goal is to be nonpartisan, why not have this be an appointive post?
Because the goal is also to be accountable. I am directly accountable to the people of the state. I do not work for the governor. I do not work for the legislature. Obviously, I try to work with them as best we can, and I think we have some success. But I made it very clear when I ran that notwithstanding my experience as a policy guy and my own personal views, I view the work of the office as strictly nonpartisan. And I feel pretty strongly that I've conducted myself that way. I haven't been afraid to criticize state government at all. We do that respectfully, and we hope that they'll listen and make the changes recommended. But if it's not elected, then it's appointed. Who's going to do that? Right? If they're appointed, they're not directly accountable to the people. I think people talk to me quite a bit when I see them out in the world, and they say, good job. And often they say it because they view me as not being afraid to take on the administration.
Dan?
I think, you know, it's a difficult thing to navigate because appointed versus elected, and really what are you accountable for, right? And that's, you know, my wife and I had this conversation. She's like, why even have it? And she goes, I don't really see the benefits coming out of this, right? So should it be more of a professional auditor in here who's doing this role and has a better or a longer term view of what's going on? We have a saying in business, you can't grow long if you don't eat short. But you need to be able to take a longer term view, right? The auditor scorecard that I keep talking about would be that a shorter term thing that we'd be hyper focused on to bring transparency to the state, right? But when that's all said and done, I think there's an opportunity for someone who really wants to now manage that going forward. But I look at it as an interesting thing. Do you want it to be appointed or do you want it an elected official? And sometimes I wonder if it's, you know, not one and the same. But there needs to be – I think it needs to be different or maybe even handled differently in a longer cycle so that you can cross administrations and get more work done.
Doug, you've mentioned how your office can make recommendations about performance audits. Mm-hmm. But the various departments of state government can pretty much ignore those recommendations, I think, if they want to. And if that's the case, should this be changed somehow to give the auditor's office more authority?
To the first point, as I've said now a couple of times, we do recommendation follow-up. And it's commonplace that within a year, at least half of the recommendations are already implemented. Within 3 or 4 years, 75% or more are adopted because they're commonsensical. That's what we offer. Furthermore, to say that they can just ignore them, in some cases they probably could. In some instances, I've heard them say, look, this to make the changes you've asked for, if it's IT, will require more resources than we have. We have to ask the legislature for additional resources. But the committees of jurisdiction pay attention to this stuff. The problems we identify are right out front. They can't hide from them. So if they're blowing us off, then they're blowing off the legislature, in fact, as well. So they don't tend to do that. Furthermore, it makes no sense for us to issue reports and make recommendations that aren't both doable, affordable, and sensible in that they're going to save money long term or make the process more efficient, and that's what we do.
Dan, do you think the office needs more authority?
I think it can use more authority. I think there needs to be, and I know the way it's currently written, it doesn't exist, but there needs to be someone who's there providing the guidance and ensuring the right things are being done by the Vermonters. And we could say it's the legislative body. They're an elected body as well. But someone needs to have the gumption to go in there and say, look, these are your common practice measures, right? Even if you don't want to you don't want to imply measures, or you don't think you have, you know, that healthcare background, respectfully, Doug, right? But there are measures already that exist for these accountable care organizations, and saying, here's what we really need to do and really influence that and drive it forward. And if they don't do it, you can every month issue a letter. Oh, we've got nothing going on here, no traction here, and just constantly put a spotlight on those things that need to be done.
The party who has the responsibility and the authority to make things happen, Dan, is the governor.
Understood.
Not the auditor.
Mm-hmm.
We don't need another party to interfere in that relationship. The governor appoints the agency secretaries and commissioners. Mm-hmm. If he or she feels that the recommendations are so important and have been ignored, that's the job of the governor to say, hey, get on it. It's not the auditor's job. I can't make people do things. And frankly, I wouldn't want that authority.
Mm-hmm.
So it sounds like the two of you really see this, the scope of this job, quite differently.
Mm-hmm.
Is that true, Dan?
I think so, definitely. I mean, I admired the work that that Doug's done to date. I think there's, like I keep saying, and there's a more proactive role to be involved and the ability to more skillfully influence what's being measured and how things are being rolled out and have a voice at the table, right? I'm comfortable being in a role like that, engaged. And like I said, I cannot imagine Phil or Sue not wanting to hear that advice and taking it objectively and saying, hey, those are some interesting ideas. Let's move forward on them and get some traction on that. Everybody wants greater transparency. You hear that all the time. Everybody wants affordability. You can't affordability if you don't have transparency and you know where your money's going and how it's being spent. So I still think there's an important role for the auditor. I think it can involve to a more proactive, engaged role, ensuring that the audit staff itself is set up for success and that Vermonters aren't caught 2-3 years down the road with programs and plans that are unmeasurable and not delivering. Well, we won't even know if they're delivering the results.
Final comment there?
It sounds like you want to be a legislator with your left hand, and you want to be the governor with your right hand. Mm-hmm. I'm perfectly happy being the auditor. I think we're making a difference.
Time now for a closing question for each of you, and try to keep your answers to 1 minute. Tell us how, if you're elected as auditor, it'll make a difference in people's lives going forward. Why should they care who the next auditor is? Dan?
As you just heard, I want to be more proactive and create a scorecard that creates that transparency. So if you're a senior citizen living on a fixed income, you'll know that we have your best interest in heart, understanding we're measuring the right things and delivering the services that you need, you know, and that come to understand. If you're a child with special needs, that we are doing the best possible job to ensure you're getting a timely service that's needed. If you're a taxpayer, that we're proven and demonstrating that we're using your money effectively and efficiently. And more importantly, like I said, if you're a state employee, we're going to help ensure that you really understand and there's clarity in the measures that are being used so that you can do a bang-up job and have a great career and not be the sticking point of every conversation.
Doug Hoffer.
Here's an example. A couple of years ago, we did a report on something called VCures, which is this remarkable, to use the phrase, all-payer database of all payments that are made by anyone for healthcare services. And a number of years ago, the legislature, when they created this system, asked then BSHCA, now the Green Mountain Care Board, to do, among other things, provide information about price transparency. Because as we all know, if you go to the hospital for a procedure and you say, how much is this going to cost? They go, oh, well, I don't know. You know, it might be this, it might be that. We'll have to wait and see. This is the only area of your life where you make these important decisions without any idea what you're going to have to pay. So the Green Mountain Care Board, for their own reasons, said they really didn't want to do it, which is very disappointing. So we spoke to the legislature. Dan, this is one of those examples where it works. And they said, well, okay, maybe the board doesn't want to do it, but we think we're going to ask the insurers to do it. Well, they did. And that system came online a few months ago. We are now reviewing it and are about to release a report on this. And this is an opportunity for Vermonters to get critical information that they never had before, thanks to this office.
This concludes the debate for State Auditor on Vermont Public Radio. Thanks to both Dan Feliciano and Doug Hoffer for being on the program today. We really appreciate it.
Thanks, Bob. Thank you.
Tomorrow on Vermont Edition, we'll look at some of the key issues in many legislative races across the state. Leaders of the Democratic, Republican, and Progressive parties will be here to talk about their top priorities in this election. Send your questions about legislative races to Vermont Edition at vpr.net and listen tomorrow at noon. VPR's election debates are produced by Rick Sengary, Sam Gale Rosen, and Meg Malone. Our director is Liam Connors. Our executive producer is Patty Daniels. I'm Bob Kinzel. Thanks for listening.